This talk is from the Pray More Retreat. You can find this talk and many others over at praymoreretreat.org.
It's really important to know that the primary way that you become a person of love is in the context of the hidden life, and in particular in the context of the simple and the humble and the ordinary, right? And so this is something which happens a lot. Guys will go, for example, to discernment weekends or discernment events or come and see weekends or like whatever. And what they're expecting is some sort of like flash of lightning, you know, like the Lord reveals my vocation and then, okay, and then my life really kind of gets going. Based on everything we said before, perhaps you realize that's probably the wrong way to kind of approach it, right? And so, you know, short of like the Lord revealing in great clarity what your vocation is, a lot of people come away from these discernment weekends like, you know, kind of deflated, maybe even like crushed in their soul, right? But to realize, again, there's great value in terms of living in the context of the hidden life, and again, in the midst of the simple and the humble and the ordinary, right? So like, even when you look at the Bible, both in the Old Testament and the New, like, think about the great figures like Moses, Joseph, St. Paul, Christ himself, right? Like, long period of like the hidden life, you know, like preceding the life of mission or the public life, if you will, right? So Christ, perfect example, like 30 years of like the hidden life, which precedes the public life, right? And here's the Lord who can, like, he can preach, he can do miracles, he's loaded with talent, he's like the perfect man, right? And yet it's the will of the Father that he kind of makes, you know, tables and chairs and a nothing town in Nazareth. And what's implied in that is that, you know, that has tremendous value. It has tremendous value. Like, another way to put it, Brett Powell talks about this, and he quotes, he cites that Gladiator movie with Russell Crowe, you know? And so I don't know if this is exactly right, but, you know, basically there's a scene where, you know, Russell Crowe, the Gladiator character, he's talking to another centurion in the army, or like a Roman general. And his friend basically says, okay, look, when you're discharged and you go home, what are you going to do? And the Russell Crowe character, Maximus, he says, well, to my horses I will say this, to my son I will say this, and to my wife, it's none of your business, right? And Brett Powell, he kind of expounds upon that. And he says, you know, in terms of like different levels of intimacy or different levels of, you know, communication or who I am in relationship to other people, right? There's like the public life, you know, where like who I am in terms of who I portray to the world, right? There's my private life, who I am with my family, for example. And then beneath that, there was another level, which is the hidden life, like who I am before the Lord and all my strengths and my weaknesses, my frailties and all those different things, right? And he says, you know, a lot of times when it comes to how we spend our time and energy, we spend tons of time in the context of the public life, a minimal amount of time on the private life, and like next to no time on the hidden life. And he says, actually, it should be the reverse, right? So the primacy of being as opposed to doing. So I spend an inordinate amount of time on the hidden life, prayer, my relationship with God, intimacy with Christ, right? And then that informs how I relate to people in the private life and the public life, right? And so it's really important for us to kind of grasp that. Like that's how salvation works. That's how growth happens, right? And so it's very much in the context of the simple and the humble and the ordinary. When we start to grasp for like extraordinary manifestations of God's grace, and we look at those as being transformative events, it's not to discount those events, but like the way that real growth and transformation happens, it's in the correspondence to the duty of the moment in the context of the simple and the humble and the ordinary. So you don't want to look at it like that as like wasted time. Like that's really, really important time. The example that comes to mind, another one, like it's a kind of a secular example again, but the Karate Kid movie, not the one with Jackie Chan, but like the older one from the 80s and stuff. I guess both apply, but you know what I'm talking about. So basically, you know, the Karate Kid, right? So he wants to learn karate. He's being beaten up by like local bullies and stuff. And he runs into this Japanese karate master, Mr. Miyagi, who like, you know, promises to teach him kung fu. And so he invites Daniel, the main character, to come to his place all the time. You know, and what does he do? Like menial tasks, right? So, you know, sand the floor and, you know, paint the fence and, you know, wax all my cars. So like the famous wax on, wax off, right? And all the time, Daniel's like, when am I going to start learning karate, right? And then he realizes, like, at a certain key point in the movie, and it's really beautiful, obviously, like, he realizes the whole time he's been learning karate, right? But it didn't come to him in the way that he expected, right? It was through the ordinary trials and circumstances and duties of life. And so it goes with us, right? When you have your mind and your heart like kind of set on like future-based things, even if those future-based things are kind of grounded in holy desires, if it takes you away from the present moments and the hidden life and the simple and the humble and the ordinary, like that's not a good move, right? You really want to cherish this time that you have, right? There's an abundance of grace very much contained in the hidden life and the simple and the humble and the ordinary, right? Now, in the course of this period of discernment, though, something else I want you to keep in mind. It's meant to be a time of purification, right? It's meant to be a time of purification. Like, I remember my spiritual director in the seminary, he would talk about this, right? He would say, like, look, even when guys enter the seminary, right, and, like, maybe legit, they're called to the holy priesthood, right? Even the time in seminary, be it, like, 5 years, 6 years, or whatever the case may be, even that time is a time of purification, where I purify my heart, I purify my desires, and I grow in freedom to love in the way that God calls me to love and the way that I actually want to love, right? So I'll give you kind of an example in this regard, right? So like in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, it talks about what's called sources of morality. Sources of morality. So you maybe heard this before, right? So intention, object, circumstance, right? So what's the thing I'm trying to achieve? You know, why am I doing it? And what are the correlated circumstances, right? And the idea is that certain things are just wicked and evil by virtue of the object chosen, right? So intrinsically evil acts. So you think about like euthanasia, abortion, like whatever, right? But other things, they might be good in themselves. But if they're done for like the wrong reasons, or even like slightly less than noble reasons, it takes away from the overall goodness of that act, right? And so it goes to this notion of purification, right? So, you know, I might have like this desire to pursue the Lord, but maybe my motivations or my freedom to do so are kind of slightly tainted. And so this time of discernment, whether we're in the seminary or not in the seminary, it's precious time because it helps us to purify our desires and, again, purify our sense of freedom to love in the way that we're called to love, right? So I'll give you an example. Michelle Benzinger, she's one of the co-hosts for this really famous Catholic podcast, Abiding Together, right? And Michelle Benzinger, she talks about how one time she went on this retreat, you know, so she went on this retreat and, you know, Michelle Benzinger is like a fantastic speaker and she does a lot of speaking engagements and participates in conferences and whatnot. And so she went to this personal retreat, this private retreat, kind of expecting, you know, it'd be a certain way. Like, you know, maybe she expected the Lord would kind of console her and say like, hey, you know, well done, good and faithful servant, or some variation of that. But instead, what she found was that the Lord kept on bringing up to her memory, or her consciousness, a painful memory from her past, right? And so just imagine the situation. Like, I'm trying to be recollected before the Lord. Maybe I'm before the Lord in the Blessed Sacrament. And I'm just like annoyed by this recurring painful memory from my past. And after a while, she realized that the Lord was bringing this thing to her attention as an opportunity for growth. And so, you know, despite what she might have preferred to pray about or pray with, she decided to pray with that particular painful memory. And how the memory kind of played out, basically, when she was, I don't know, in high school or even before that, elementary school, she liked this young boy, right? So you know that the story's going to end in disaster, right? So she liked this young boy, and she wanted to impress this young boy by auditioning for a play or a musical or something. And she did it, and she just, like, totally messed it up, right? And so imagine, especially when you're a young girl, like, you're just, like, her little girl heart was crushed and stuff. And so she came out of the audition just like totally deflated, right? And she ran into this young boy that she liked. But rather than receive her wounded heart with love and compassion and care and all that stuff, he just looked at her and was like really flippant and insensitive. And was just like, wow, like you really blew that one, didn't you? You know? And, you know, she realized in the context of the retreat, in the way that she didn't realize when she was young, that was a really formative moment for her that really kind of crushed her soul. Because at that point, she had made this vow, right? And the vow was like, look, from now on, I will always be strong, and I will always be, to the best of my ability, perfect. I will never be weak, I'll never be frail, I'll never be vulnerable, because I don't want to be hurt like I was hurt in the aftermath of that rehearsal. Like, I don't want to be hurt like that ever again, you know? And so imagine a situation, right, where you go through life, and like you have this like, you know, steel will and this guardedness, like self-protection, right? We want to be strong and productive and perfect all the time. The world, like, you know, the world in the bad sort of sense, will always encourage you in that direction because you're producing that which the world finds to be important and valuable. And the world wants you to be strong and perfect and all these things, right? But it comes at the price of your humanity, right? Because the only way you can learn to be transformed by love is to be vulnerable, right? Like Father John Ricardo talks about this, like what's intimacy? We often reduce intimacy to like a strictly physical thing, and certainly that's part of it, right? But intimacy in its essence is like shared vulnerability. Like I take a chance and show to you my wounded heart and my wounded self. Hopefully you're doing the same thing. And we kind of meet in between and intimate relationships obtain, whether we're talking about marriage or friendship or whatever, right? And so here was this young woman, even in adulthood, where she thought to herself, I can never be weak. I can never be vulnerable. And it was really costing her in terms of her relationship with other people and even in her relationship with God. And she realized that God was calling her to a greater freedom. Like this may have served you for a certain period of time in terms of a mode of self-protection, but like you don't need that anymore. Like you can let this thing go to kind of come to a greater stage and holiness and freedom to love, right? I think it was like Henry Nouwen who talked about this, right? And he said, he kind of referenced the story of the prodigal son. And he said, it's kind of funny, you know, like if you don't have clarity about the fact that you're unconditionally loved by your father in heaven, I'll show some shades of the boyhood stage by John Eldridge, right? If you don't have clarity that you're unconditionally loved by your father in heaven, you will either become like the younger son or the older son in the story of the prodigal son, right? So if you're the younger son, you give into a sense of despair, basically, right? Like I'm no good or whatever. And I distract myself from the fact that I'm not really beloved unconditionally by indulging in self-destructive or self-indulgent behavior. And we've all been there, right? Or, again, the alternative is you become the elder son, where I believe in love, but I believe in love in a conditional sort of way, right? So, you know, people love me or want to be with me because I'm strong, I'm perfect, I'm productive. So, you know, Michelle Benzinger in terms of her kind of high school experience or whatever, right? And the idea is that you want to have clarity about, you know, again, God's unconditional love for you. And what that does, it allows you to be at peace, but also it gives you the freedom to just like be and love in the way that God calls you to love, right? So I think it was Dr. Bob Schutz who talked about this, where he's like, think about like Christ the Lord, right? So one of the great amazing things about the person of Christ is that obviously he has enormous clarity about the fact that he is the beloved Son of the Father, right? Like, who am I? I'm the beloved son of my Father in heaven, right? And so that gives him a certain freedom. Not self-protection, but just being able to kind of go through life with an open heart. Because you think about it, right? Like, in terms of the gospel, was Jesus ever sad? Was he ever angry? Was he ever disappointed? Was he ever hurt? Like, was he ever, like, not loved by people who should have loved him, right? Who had a duty to love him? And like, yeah, because everyone had to love him, right? But also, like, just you look at the gospel, even like in a superficial way, there's a lot of times where Jesus Christ is like, you know, massively hurt, not just physically, but just in terms of his spirit. There's a reason why Jesus weeps, right? And yet, he never makes the logical conclusion in his mind, because I've been unloved in this situation, therefore I'm unlovable, right? So regardless of what happens to him, like I'm hurt and maybe that person shouldn't have done it and that person maybe was intentional in terms of hurting me in that way, it doesn't impinge on my sense of identity. I remain the beloved son of my Father in heaven, and that allows him the freedom to live with an open heart and to love in the way the Father calls him to love, right? So really important thing. So this idea of purification, right? We touched on this notion of deep desires as well, and that's really important to know as well, right? So this is really good to know. Oftentimes when it comes to discernment, like we think of it in terms of like, here's God's will for me on the one hand, and here's my will for myself on the other hand. And certainly there's something to be said about concupiscence and desire, the inclination towards sin, our fallen nature, right? So yeah, there's a reason why we reach for the chips, right? At the same time, something that's really important to know, this is like a foundational principle when it comes to Christian anthropology, right? Your deepest desires correspond with God's desires for you, right? So your deepest desires correspond with God's desires for you, right? Which again, ties to this notion of like purification, right? So when I peel back the layers of the onion, in terms of my desires, my superficial desires, my lesser desires, what I will discover is that, again, my deepest desires correspond with God's desires for me, Right? You don't need to be afraid of that. You don't need to be worried that that's not the case. That's just a truth of Christian anthropology. And the Lord knows that, right? And the whole thing about journeying through the hidden life, the simple and the humble, the ordinary, with the ups and the downs and the crucible of life and even your struggle with sin, the Lord is purifying your sense of what your deep desires actually are, right? So I'll give you an example in this regard. Think about the parable of the two sons, right? So really famous parable. Basically, here's this guy. He's rich. He has two sons. And basically, he goes to them personally to invite them to work in the vineyard, right? So you remember the story. So goes to one guy. He says, will you work in my vineyard? Guy says, no. And then eventually comes back. Goes to the second son. Will you work in my vineyard? Guy says, yeah, for sure. But then he doesn't come, right? And that's the end of the story, right? And so you break it down, like, okay, what's the point of that story, right? So first of all, just to kind of like think about what the things represent. So the father represents, obviously, God the Father. The sons represent us. The world represents, like, you know, the vineyard represents the world, rather. And the work is, this is kind of interesting, the work of salvation. Now, you got to ask yourself, okay, how is the work of salvation brought about primarily? Otherwise known as the redemption of the world. Through obedience to the will of the Father, right? But in particular, through the narrow path of Christ's suffering and death, right? And so it speaks to the reason why the Father goes to the sons one at a time to invite them to work in the vineyard, right? Because ordinarily, if you're rich, you wouldn't go by yourself. You would send a delegate, like a servant or a slave, like, come do this thing. But the reason why the Father goes to them personally and intimately is because it's a really intimate thing that he's asking them to do, which requires total buy-in. I can't just do this at arm's length. I need to be committed, mind and heart and spirit, not just my physicality, right? So basically what he's asking to do one at a time is, okay, son, basically you've come of age, and are you willing to suffer with me for the salvation of the world? To suffer and die with me for the salvation of the world? Again, being, right? So the mission is the extension of simply being and abiding with the Lord, right? So now here we come of age, you've come of age, and I invite you now to participate in this work, which is really important to me, namely the salvation of the world, again, through the narrow gate or the narrow way of the cross, right? Now, the guy who says yes, he gives a superficial answer. Like, it comes through more in the Greek as opposed to the English, right? But, like, it's almost like, I always imagine, like, the father barely gets the words out in terms of the invitation. And the guy who says yes is like, yeah, sure, like, whatever. Yeah, we'll do it. You know, my captain, right? And it's like, were you even paying attention? And the fact that he gives like a quick superficial response, like, isn't any wonder in retrospect that he doesn't actually come through, right? Whereas the other guy, the reason why he says no is because he's paying attention, right? And so, yeah, he's human. And so just like all of us, the human part of us naturally doesn't want to suffer and die for anything, even though it's with my Father in heaven, and even though it's for a really good cause, in the name of the salvation of the world, right? But what's interesting is that if you look at the original Greek, the reason why the son who says no initially comes back, the way it's translated, it's like aftercare, you know, which is kind of interesting. And so the idea is that it's like everything combined, right? So like he has the intimacy and familiarity with his father, the freedom in his relationship with his father, that he can process with his father, right? He could tell his father what he actually thinks, right? So there's that conversation. So he has the freedom to have that conversation. And then he goes away, right? And he's aftercaring. He's kind of weighing the things in his heart, right? So, yes, I have a fear of suffering. Yes, I have a fear of death. But yet, you know, I feel this pain of saying no to my father. And when I examine my own heart, I realize, despite my fear of suffering, despite my fear of death, my deeper desire, my deepest desire, is to share in my father's blessed life, which involves a sharing in his mission. And so he comes back and joyfully shares in the mission of the Father, right? Now, that story is meant to be really consoling for the people of God, including us, right? Because the idea is that God gets it, right? And so in terms of, like, you know, our journey of faith, right? Like, it's not all going to be like, you know, a straight progression up, right? It's like ups and downs, like one step back, two steps forward type thing. Whenever the Lord permits evil, even our own sin, it is for a greater good, right? And so the whole point of that story is that the Lord, like, he recognizes that in order for us to get to that point where we make the firm, unflinching yes in terms of acting out of our deepest desires, which correspond with God's desires for us, there's necessarily going to be this kind of going back and forth in terms of like, you know, I'm afraid, but now I feel courageous, and then I fall and I struggle with the sin, but then I learn my deepest desires through that and whatever, right? A long, complicated, involved process, but like, that's simply how it goes. And the Lord is not, he's not surprised by that. He's not scandalized by that. Like that's just the way it goes, right? And so I say that as an important framework for yourselves, right? So the hidden life is important. The simple, humble, ordinary life is important. But also this process of purification in terms of growing in freedom to love, purifying and acknowledging my deepest desires, it takes time and there's ups and downs. But that's okay. And the Lord sees and he understands and he's with you every step of the way.